here's a story from The World.
The UN climate summit wrapped up this weekend in Glasgow.
Hearing no objections, it is so decided.
Negotiators from the nearly 200 participating nations hammered out the most forceful set of agreements yet to combat climate change. A few highlights: strong language underscoring the importance of limiting global temperature rise to 1.5 degrees Celsius and pledging more money for adaptation. Hopeful signs, but we're talking words and promises. Nearly every climate envoy or minister left Glasgow saying much more needs to be done and fast. So why does this gap between ambition and action persist? The World's environment correspondent Carolyn Beeler in Glasgow starts us off today inside the negotiation hall.
After 2 weeks of closed-door negotiations, the diplomatic theater of COP26 unfolded in public on Saturday. Small groups of negotiators stood talking to each other between tables on the floor of the UN plenary hall, delaying a meeting that was supposed to have started an hour earlier. Juan Pablo Orsonio from Greenpeace was watching from the back of the room.
You're seeing the last stretch when you put in your best players and you try to get a little bit more right before the actual deal is presented and voted up or down.
Orsonio pointed out the two biggest players in the room, the climate envoys for the U.S. and China.
We just saw John Kerry walk across the room and meet with Xi. So this is a powerful image right here, which of course the whole room is turning their heads and watching attentively.
Earlier in the day, a scrum of people pressed close around Kerry and representatives from Gabon and Guinea as they argued about a section on carbon markets. Orsonio says Kerry was essentially whipping the vote here, trying to make sure everyone would approve of the text.
This all happened in an open forum, right? So this is part of the theater, right? I'm sure that Kerry and everybody else wanted to show the world what was happening, what was the holdup, to put pressure on governments to accept the deal.
Right before that deal was set to be adopted, India, backed by China, asked for a change to the section that mentions fossil fuels for the very first time in COP history. Earlier in the day, Indian Environment Minister Bhupender Yadav made the case for watering down the language.
Fossil fuels and their use have enabled parts of the world to attain high levels of wealth and well-being. Developing countries have a right to their fair share of the global carbon budget and are entitled to the responsible use of fossil fuels within this scope.
India's request led to another flurry of rapid negotiations. Nick Mabey, who runs an environmental think tank, pointed to what he called a feral meeting of the European Council near the front of the room.
The Europeans are just meeting in front of us in the European Council, and hopefully they will come up with a form of language that keeps everybody in the room and COP finishing on time.
India was successful in its last-minute push.
On the text of Para 20, of discussion of 1/COP26.
The final wording of the agreement calls for parties to phase down instead of phase out dirty coal. As the COP president, Alok Sharma, moved to ratify the deal, he choked up twice.
I think today we can say with credibility that we have kept 1.5 degrees within reach. But its pulse is weak. And it will only survive if we keep our promises, if we translate commitments into rapid action.
The last moments of the negotiations illustrate how challenging it is for the UN body to make the kinds of sweeping changes needed to keep global warming at the safest possible levels. Helen Mountford from the World Resources Institute does see some hope in the agreement.
We've made some serious progress in closing the gaps, but nowhere near enough. What we have done, though, is the negotiators have agreed specific approaches to actually try and close those gaps going forward.
Pledges submitted at this summit overshoot the 1.5 degree target by a lot. The agreement requests countries to come back to the table next year in the hopes that they can commit to bigger cuts. But the final climate deal left representatives of vulnerable nations particularly unsatisfied.
Well, I'm very disappointed, because we came here to get a concrete outcome.
Aminath Shana is the environment minister from the Maldives.
It's not what we wanted, and it's not what is needed for the Maldives and small islands.
Vulnerable nations came to COP26 with a set of demands that went largely unmet. Developed countries haven't delivered the $100 billion a year by 2020 they pledged to help developing nations on climate change. Countries didn't deliver the balance at the summit. Instead, the COP26 decision expressed deep regret that they'd so far failed on their pledge and offered to boost financing for adaptation. The agreement also sets up a formal framework for setting new finance goals for 2025. Tina Stege from the Marshall Islands says this will continue to be a key issue for vulnerable nations.
We need to have some of this financing flow so that those countries like mine can make the transformations that they need to make, particularly in terms of adaptation.
Developing countries also didn't get the fund for climate damages they asked for. What they got instead was a promise for a dialogue. Salim Al-Haq, an advisor to vulnerable nations, says that at least opens the door for progress at the next summit.
We'll come back next year in COP27 in Egypt, which will be an African COP where this issue will be on our agenda. It wasn't here. We will do that in Egypt, and then we'll take it from there.
The summit did finalize one of the trickiest issues left from the Paris Agreement, the rules for global carbon markets. Even so, Huck says the COP26 deal should have been more ambitious.
Incremental progress is good, but incremental progress is simply not enough. What we need is transformational.
As negotiators left the meeting hall late Saturday night, they were already talking about plans for COP27. For The World, I'm Carolyn Beeler.